Hey everybody, my name is Michael Pisani.
And this is Terrell Schilling.
And you're listening to Outrageous Creativity 300.
The sequel!
This is the show where you're going to find everything creative, fun, and informative.
Amusing and insightful, deep, sensual. Anything that you want in life, you'll get from this podcast. That's a fact.
Make no guarantees, but we are. Ladies and gentlemen, come join us.
Have a laugh, yeah. And so here we are, Michael. Number three.
Number three.
Number three.
Number three.
Number nine or number three. How's your week been?
Week's been good.
Yeah.
Very good, yeah. Actually, I've been cooking a lot more, trying to eat out less. And I've been making chicken wings.
How come I haven't gotten any chicken wings, Michael?
Because you got ribs, Terrell. You know that.
Oh, yeah, I did. I came over the other night, and Michael was like Mr. Cook Man. He was like, yeah, I got the grill going. He had his little chef hat on and his apron. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty sexy. Yeah. Wait, did I say? Hold on. Where's that edit button? So, anyways, it was a good time. Yeah, we hung out. Me, Michael, Kyler, we had some ribs. But, you know, it was a good time. It was great. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a great time that we had together. This, it was a moment that was shared.
Yeah, between ribs. Yeah.
Between ribs.
So there was there was a little bit of that, and let's see.
How about yourself? Anything going on in your daily dose today?
Oh, I got a big drop for you, Michael.
Let me hear it.
I've been waiting days to tell you this.
Okay.
Like, purposely. Dun, dun, dun. I quit the health store.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they were so good to you.
Oh, yeah. It was the best job I ever had. Man, it was a really emotional leave. Yeah. It was so hard. No, I was so happy to leave.
Really?
Oh, so happy.
Were you doing somersaults outside, you know, or through the corridors?
Not even. It was just like, I'm out. I'm out like sauerkraut.
Wow.
And that's a quote from I Love New York.
Well, good for you. I know how you... We're very adamant that that job was only a job, and it was very terrible of a job.
So. Yeah, it was for the time being, and it's funny, ironically, I'm getting more work on my other job now. Like, they were calling me, like, the day of anyway, so I kind of was going to quit anyway. And it was a temporary thing, but it was just... Well, the way that it happened was I was closing, as always, and I was preparing food... for the next day. And again, I don't mind doing that, but that's something that should be done in the morning. You know, because I don't know, that's just not the time to do it. And it's not fair to make one person do that much work. It was just too much work. And it got to the point where I couldn't even stand and scratch my head. I literally had people spying on me. I had people following me around the store.
That's messed up.
It is. Well, it's weird too. People were like timing, like how long I was going to the bathroom. Like, it was really weird. And again, I'm not going to say who they are, but, you know,
it's corporate. That's all corporate.
It's very corporate. So anyways, long story short, I'm pushing the cart through the freezer and the cart just broke. I didn't even break it. It just broke. And all that food, trays and trays of food went and fell to the ground.
Wow.
Oh, dude, I was so pissed. I was just like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I did all this work. And here's the thing. Not only was I doing that, Michael, but I was also, you know, handling the counter by myself. So I was essentially doing two jobs
mm-hmm.
at one time.
Yeah.
And so that it fell to the ground and I'm super pissed. And my boss comes in and, you know, he immediately makes an assumption that it's because of customers. And I was like, it's not that. And he was like, well, you know, Terrell, what you're doing is really not that hard. And I just like, I'm out.
Then you do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why you're always leaning on the wall on your phone,
mm-hmm.
you know? And yeah, you know, so I'm very happy to be out of there.
Good.
Yeah, that's kind of about it for me, really.
Good. Hopefully you're not listening to this podcast alone.
Mm-mm.
For we have coming up a very twisted tale submitted for your entertainment.
It's not going to be scary, is it, Michael?
You tell me. Dark Tales from Nowhere. Along a long stretch of highway in the dead of night sat the sheriff on patrol. Graveyard shift. There had been no action for hours, but then again, the desert never really sleeps. Sheriff scanned over the radio transmissions to see if there was any activity over the wire. Only static. With haste and seemingly from out of nowhere, headlights could be seen growing larger in the officer's rearview mirror. As the car raced past, it was clocked at 15 miles over the speed limit, and a chase ensued. For miles, the pursuit went on, with the mystery driver showing nothing but indifference to the law. When all at once, in a last-ditch effort to avoid capture, the driver turned off all of its lights and swerved off the road. What then surprised the sheriff, more than this erratic behavior, was the fact that immediately afterwards, the car was nowhere to be found. As per protocol, the sheriff called in to report the strange activity. However, when he explained to the operator the car in pursuit, the operator informed him that a car matching that description had been involved in a crash during a drag race on that very road 15 years ago. Coincidence? That night was the sheriff's last graveyard shift.
Shivers. My God, that was a terrifying story, Michael.
Thank you. It came from a very dark place.
A very dark... A dark place, I'm assuming, from nowhere?
Seemingly.
Seemingly, yeah. So, just out of curiosity, what car was that guy driving?
Unknown.
Unknown.
It was an old car. I'm guessing it'd probably be, I don't know, Chevy.
Ooh, I love Chevy.
You know, Chevys make good ghost cars.
I used to have a Chevy Malibu.
Did you?
Yeah, I had a 1976 350 Chevy Malibu 5.7 liter. That thing was a tank.
Cool.
Oh man, I used to beat everyone on the road. Michael, we were just having a little discussion. Who did you audition for at Universal?
Well, okay, so there's a little bit of backstory to this. At Halloween Horror Nights every year, they kind of got flack for this one year, but they would bring out the Bill and Ted Show, which is a parody show of, you know, current popular culture and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I auditioned a couple times and got pretty far. And one year I went for Spock. One year it was the guy from Heroes that Zachary Quinto also played.
Mm-hmm.
But
he gets everything, I guess.
Yeah. One year they had me do the ShamWow guy.
No way.
Because that was really popular. And so instantly I knew exactly what to do because I would see those commercials everywhere. And I would say, look, you're going to put it everywhere, right? You can put one in the car, you can put one in the boat, you can put one in the house, and look, it cleans, it dices, it splices, it's got everything you need. And look, you're going to put it everywhere, right? So buy one now. And that was my ShamWow impersonation, and it was pretty good. They called me back.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, you never told me that. That's crazy.
It was part of it. It was part of it. And then I got cut.
So was this an audition to replace him?
No. It was to play that character in the show, the parody show, in the park.
Okay, I was going to say, I was like, because I know he hit tough times, but...
Well, yeah, he was arrested for some lewd behavior in Florida, but...
Lewd behavior that he couldn't mop up with a ShamWow.
Jesus.
Yeah. You know, and that leads us to our next segment, ladies and gentlemen. Do you ever have an item that you just are dying to have? Something you need in life, something essential, something that's going to make your day better. Well, guess what? These items are not them.
Pets or things you really don't need.
Have you ever seen a flame that you wish could be bigger? Have you ever sat around a campfire and said to yourself, man, I wish I could spread this around? Well, now you can. It's Monco's Fire Spreader, the industrially made and never tested wooden rake with attachable kerosene-filled container, primed and ready to spread that fire around. Remember the burning of Atlanta? We could have done it in half the time. Remember Waco? We could have done better. works on chimney fires, grease fires, and forest fires. Don't believe us? Just listen to these happily satisfied customers.
Yeah, I used it, and now I have no hair visible on my body.
As an arsonist, this has made my job a whole lot better.
You heard it here, folks. We couldn't try to write those testimonials. Call now and you'll get a free copy of Backdraft on VHS. Burnt. The Monco Fire Spreader. Available now on any one of our 17 pickup trucks along Highways 7, 12, and Historic Route 66. Call now.
Long before hybrid cars. Long before America's first highways. There was the road. And not even paved roads. And just simple rocks and dirt laid out before us. A chosen path. A path leading us to salvation, to hope, to redemption. Introducing the 2015 Dufresne, a goddamn miracle machine.
And just a few ads from our sponsors, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that.
Man, I just need to get myself out to one of those routes and then I can pick up.
I know, it's a good deal. The funny thing about that ad, they never said how much it cost.
You're right. In either of them.
Yeah. I
guess you're just left to haggle.
I think it's a haggle business.
It's got to be, or the barter.
Yeah, or the fires. I would imagine if you're getting a fire starter, you probably wouldn't want to use credit card.
No.
That's a cash business.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So anyways, folks, we're going to play you a little song. We got a band, they're from Barcelona, Spain. They're called The Ewans, and this is a little track from them. This one is called Huelas Rojas. With Huelas Rojas. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Very energizing track.
Yeah, really energetic, really like crazy drums on that track.
Oh, yeah. I mean, easily.
Yeah, and I like the guitars and stuff, and they kind of have a little bit of like, they kind of sound like the Hives a little bit. Do you remember Do you remember the Hives?
I didn't get too much into them, but I do know of them, yes.
Yeah. They wore a lot of white suits. They were pretty good.
Moving right along here. Our next bit is something of a rehashing of a very old idea. Old idea, but good premise. It's called Sidewalk Interviews. Mm. This is something that me and Kyler came up with just just to have fun, just to get out. He had an old tape recorder, and we decided to just go out and ask people on the street random questions. And we had a really good cross-section of people talk to us. I mean, who's going to say no to a, you know, 14-year-old kid, you know, back at the time?
Oh, so this was in middle school or, like, high school?
Yeah. No, yeah, it was, like, yeah, it was, well, because I met him in middle school. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever age you are then, I was thinking, like, 12, 13.
Yeah.
Right? And we talked to some guys from out of state. We talked to a homeless man. We talked to a guy that had been hooked on drugs for years.
Oh, wow.
And it was, yeah, it was just a very interesting thing to share with other people. And so I decided for the show to bring it back. And this time we're going to focus it mainly on our artistic expression.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. That's what we have going on for our next bit.
Yeah. Here is Sidewalk Interviews.
Sidewalk Interviews. That's where we go out on a sidewalk, an actual sidewalk, and ask people questions about things that may or may not even matter.
All right, so how do you feel about how Oakland has changed?
I mean, have you noticed anything like that?
I mean, I've heard, I don't live in Oakland, but I mean, I've kind of heard of, yeah, the movements of what you're talking about. And, you know, I mean, I think it's probably good and bad. You know, I mean, I think the reality of life is that, you know, things die and new things grow up. You know what I mean? If you look at a forest, you look at nature, you look at the cycle of life, we all have a lifespan, you know? And so I think even for a city like Oakland, you know, the fact that new companies are moving in, it's kind of a new cycle of life for Oakland, you know? And maybe some of the old previous generations, previous things are beginning to die off, but I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. I just see it as a new phase of what Oakland is about.
Well, I was born in Oakland in 1961, and we moved to Pinole, the family did, in 1969. And I moved back here about 2 years ago, and even since then I've seen a lot of changes, both in the sort of growth of various, you know, places for the art community to thrive, like on Telegraph Avenue, and I don't know, it just seems like it keeps growing and thriving and changing and evolving, I guess is, would be the word.
How would you define art?
Art is the language of the soul. Art is sort of something that, it's another language that words can't fully express, and so it's expressed in music, it's expressed in pictures, it's expressed in sculptures, etc. And ultimately, I feel like art should kind of draw people to the beauty of life and the beauty of just what exists around us, creation, the stars, the universe. And some art is kind of dark, and I think more and more in the so-called modern art movement, I actually want to call it the modern garbage movement, because I really don't think that that's art at all. I think it's
what,
sort of a...
What in particular, if you don't mind me asking, like, are you thinking of, maybe?
I don't know, just like the Museum of Modern Art, where they'll, like, literally put a toilet and, like, you know, put, like, a blood on it or something and call that art. And it's really not art, but I think that what they're tapping into is they're trying to express some sort of pain that they feel in their own soul, and they don't have words for it, so they're creating an image or they're creating a piece that sort of brings that to life.
I think art is up to the individual. I think the whole point is that there isn't a clear definition for it. I think it can be whatever you want it to be.
Art is, I don't know, maybe something you, it's whatever the artist defines it as, you know, you put something in it, frame it however you decide to frame it, whether it's music or literature or a piece of something you drew or painted. And you put it out there into the public, and then it's for up to whoever views it or experiences it to judge. I suppose that's how I define it.
How do you place value on someone's art? Like, what makes you see a piece of art, like whether it's a CD or a painting, and make you want to pay for it? You know?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, this is just my layman's opinion on that, since I'm sure there's a lot of lofty ideals on what makes art good or whatever, but I think part of it is the craft. I mean, I certainly think that some people have a really beautiful craft, and I mean, you can kind of I don't even think you need to be a scholar to see it. I think you just see it and it grabs you. It's kind of like if you see a sunset, it grabs you. If you're a man and you see a beautiful woman, it kind of grabs your attention. There's something innate in beauty that just grabs you.
I like the idea of owning someone's art. I think it's hard to say that it's all based entirely on the individual. Of course, I like to believe it does. I like to believe that it's just on the impact it has on me. But I think that there's definitely an emotional engagement. If something affects me, if art affects me emotionally, then I'll buy it and own it, whatever that means.
Well, I would have to say that's part of if they become famous and popular enough and catch on. Because sometimes some of the best artists, throughout history have gone completely unrecognized, whether they've had published works or whether they're, selling their individual canvases or whatever. I don't really know. The value is sort of inherent in the artwork itself, and if it moves one individual, the artist themselves, and or maybe a group of people who view it, or his friends and family, whatever. It's hard to sort of quantify that.
What do you think happened to taste?
It's, again, art is, it's the language of the soul. It's a reflection of people's inner world. And so when art continues to go downhill, what it's really saying about society is that society has started to go downhill. And whether you want to look at movies as an art form, whether you want to look at songs as an art form, the reason that it's becoming worse and worse and darker and less innocent is because people have turned away from God in this country.
I think that there's a huge number of reasons why people go to see this that isn't based at all perhaps on individual taste, but based on what people are told to like and what is popular and what sells. And by going to see these things, you're buying into a certain lifestyle that is perhaps appealing to people.
Let's see. Taste buds generally vary, I hate to use this word again, but according to the individual. And taste has generally gone downhill, but that's something you're going to have when there's more freedom of expression. And some people just don't, some artists, it would seem to me, don't sort of work within the confines of the parameters of taste or whatever. For instance, the musician Frank Zappa, on a couple of his sort of latter-day, late 1970s, early 80s albums, I'm a huge Zappa fan, but on a few of the songs on those albums, he sort of pushed things a little too far and just got basically crude. The music is good for the most part, but some of the lyrics were just, for him, based on an experience he had in the early 60s, where he got thrown in jail because he was framed by police.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for talking to me.
And that was Sidewalk Interviews.
Very fun day, actually, going out and talking to those folks.
Yeah, that was cool. I enjoyed that. Yeah, we actually first started off in Berkeley. We went over to started by People's Park and kind of worked our way down. And Michael, do you want to talk about the guys you bumped into?
Right off the bat, as you can probably tell in one of the interviews, we found a group of Christians who they came to me because I was walking with my cane because of my bum knee, and they said, "Oh, sir, we see that you're in some sort of physical pain. We'd like to pray for you. Would that be okay?" And I said, "Sure, as long as I can interview you for our segment." So it was kind of a mutual transaction.
It's a win-win situation.
Win-win.
Yeah. So that happened. And then we actually met that really nice girl who was... She was
the girl from England, yeah.
Yeah, she was really cool because she really embraced our questions and was like into it and, gave great answers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last guy was on Peabon Avenue. And he was a big Zappa fan.
Oh, boy, was he. And actually one of the only people we actually interviewed from the Bay Area. So we could...
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, we could ask him that one question about how it's changed. Because we're both from, the Bay Area. And we would want to see from other perspectives how the area has changed. Because it has undergone some gentrification and some artists' communities have been forced out and other communities have sprung up, and we wanted to see if other people had noticed it, and he did.
I don't know. It's different for everyone, but for me, it's a mixed bag of emotions, because on one hand, I'm really happy that Oakland's a safer place and we have businesses and there's things to do and there's a nightlife, but at the same time, there's a lot of people here who aren't from here that are kind of rude and just, I don't know, it's turning into a city. And I always liked Oakland because I always loved Oakland because it was not a town that was cool to be from for the longest time. People like made fun of me from being like, oh, you're from ghetto ass Oakland, and now it's the opposite. So it rubs me the wrong way. It's annoying, you know.
Yeah,
but sign of the times. So that brings us to our second song of today's podcast. This comes from a band from Oslo, Norway. They're called This Sect, and the song that we're gonna play today is called Book Burner. So enjoy. This sect, all the way from Norway.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's typical of the European style of the high energy and the rock and bass.
Yeah, I know. They have such good energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say that because, like, I think it's kind of easier in some ways to be, like, a sad artist in America. And seriously. And then, like, you go to other places, like, in... particularly like even with English music, it's usually almost always upbeat.
Yeah.
You know? And, I like that. I mean,
it's easy to write sad songs, but it's really hard to write an upbeat song in a way, at least to keep your attention like that for that long.
Yeah. You know? But, and I really like the bass, you know?
Yeah.
Especially early on. It was really like, it was deep and it was, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good band. And I'm very jealous of their production. Very well produced songs. So for our last segment, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I don't want to be a downer, but I got some stuff I want to get off my chest. I have some facts that,
what's wrong?
I don't know if anything's wrong. It's just, there's this information that needs to be told to the general public. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And, you know, I don't want to raise any eyebrows, but it has to do with, a certain group of people.
Clown problems.
I'm Dr. Big Pants. I was a legitimate doctor, forced into clowning until I botched an open heart surgery. Tried to pull a chicken out of the body. Lost my license. God, I lost everything. Till one day I was drowning my sorrows in a bunch of nuggets inside of a arched chain food restaurant, and I thought to myself, I could be like that guy. So I found myself a new home at the circus. Those were some pretty big shoes to fill. You know why clowns always go in the same car? It's because we don't have a car of our own. That's right. We all have to commute in one car. And if you're not going at the same place that they're going, tough, that's your new destination. So, before every gig, I would lather up my hands with the seltzer water. Just out of routine. And by seltzer water, I mean gin. And by lather up, I mean my mouth. So at this one gig, I remember, I was trying to make this watermelon disappear. Halfway through the trick, I forgot how it was done. So I just kind of stuffed it down my pants. I think people figured it out when I walked away with a limp.
Yeah, they call me Sneezy. Sneezy the Clown. Boy, one thing that they don't tell you about those big shoes, they never fit. Never. You stand in them all day, sweating like a pig, performing like a monkey. The one thing that I like about those shoes, though, it's a good place to hide your gun. The one thing they don't tell you about red noses, when you want to go up to them and squeeze them, it hurts. It hurts real bad. Of course it hurts. That's what happens when you do cocaine all night. I had a real bad, rough time last year. Went up to this one house. It was a birthday party. Two kids. Tough gig. Knocking on the door. Knocking. Banging. Finally, the parents come to the door and they say, "What are you doing here?" I said, "What do you think I'm doing here? I'm Sneezy. I'm gonna entertain you." They said, "It's midnight." I said, "I don't care." The worst thing a clown could ever get is tomatoes. There's nothing worse. You're standing up there, doing your thing, trying your best. And all of a sudden, in that darkness, you see a red blob coming at you. And you don't know what it is. Maybe it's another clown. Maybe he brought more cocaine. No. It's a tomato. That's the worst pain in the world. Having a tomato smashing against your face.
Such facts, such stories, such
lively lives these people live.
I can't believe it. Can't believe it. My God. Clowns are really creepy.
I'll say. I mean, I enjoy them in small bursts.
I enjoy them in no bursts.
you find yourself around no clowns a lot, I guess.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to ask you, have you ever been to a party with a clown? Or, like, did you ever have a clown at your birthday?
I was always the clown when at the birthday because, you know, I was a magician.
But you didn't, you know.
I mean, I didn't, ever did the makeup. No.
Okay. Thank God.
No.
Thank God.
Okay, so
you have more dignity than that.
To answer your question, I did not. I have not been to a clown, birthday party with a clown there.
Me neither.
No.
I almost went to Ringling Brothers when I was a kid, but I never went. So I've never actually seen like a clown before.
That show's good though. I've seen it at least once.
Okay.
It's really quality. And yeah.
Well, I mean, that's like a legit show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Have, though. I've been to a party where they had a marionette performer. Okay. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because the little marionettes were clowns.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. This is a very special treat. We got a little bit of time left here. So I wanted to throw in something that I think you'll all really enjoy. A little known fact, I don't think Terrell knows this, is that I live right next door to one of Tom Waits' summer houses. And just by coincidence, when I went out to take the trash, I saw Tom already going through my trash. So I looked at him and said, "Hey, Tom, would you like to be on my podcast?" And somehow he agreed. So here he is, for the very first time on Outrageous Creativity 300, with an original song, Mr. Tom Waits.
So anyways, this is the end of our podcast, number 3. Hope you enjoyed what you heard.
Man, went by so fast.
Yeah, it went by really fast. Yeah, and if by fast you mean it took us 6 hours to record this, then I agree, Michael.
Yep.
It went by really fast.
Yep.
I don't know. Today was like...
The magic of podcasting.
The magic of podcasting. Yes. Should we do our credits, Michael?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to thank, you know, everybody who gave us the time of day on the street, and those who didn't give us the time of day, I'd like to give them the finger.
Yeah.
But they can't see it because it's online.
Well, by finger, we mean a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that thumb is pointing down. Yeah. Like, kind of like Gladiator. Let's see. I would like to give thanks to paper because I wrote a lot of things down today, and desk.
How about the bands?
The band. Oh, God. Yeah. I'd like to thank This Sect from Norway. Those guys are so nice. Because when they emailed me, they were like, "Oh, hugs from Norway."
Hugs. Yay.
I was like, "Oh, that's sweet." And then the Ewons.
Ewons. Yeah.
Yeah. Such great bands. Again, just I love that we play bands that, you know, you probably wouldn't hear on the radio most of the time.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, culture yourselves.
Yeah, go out there, go to the bookstore, grab a book you would normally never read and sit down and check it out.
Go to an open mic.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, go to Starry Plow.
Anyway, if you'd like what you heard, definitely follow us on Twitter at OC300.
Or email us at outrageouscreativity300@gmail.com.
Peace.
See ya.